I read this amazing quote that was, God makes trans people for the same reason they make grapes and not wine and wheat and not bread, so that we can share in the joy and mystery of creation.
Oh, I love that. Welcome to Doing It with me, Hannah Witten, where we talk all things sex, relationships, dating, and our bodies. Hello, welcome back to Doing It. This is the first episode of 2021, the first episode of season four, and I'm really excited to kick off this season. Lots of great guests and themes around sex to discuss. My wonderful guest in this first episode back is Andy Thornton. Andy is a bi-gender illustrator and sex educator for the School of Sexuality Education, and they are Stonewall's LGBTQ plus person of faith role model. This episode is filled with so much goodness. We talk about all sorts. Andy talks about their experience being queer and non-binary, what being bi-gender means to him, and how all that relates to being a Christian. Andy shares some queer stories that feature in the Bible that you may not know about, and we chat about the difference between a tolerating Christian community versus an affirming one when it comes to gender and sexuality. We talk about the social constructs of gender and go on a big tangent about language and sexual orientation. I love me a good tangent about language. And we also talk about autism and vaginismus. I told you we cover a lot of ground in this episode. Welcome back. I hope you enjoy this episode and strap in for another season. As usual, you can find more information and links to everything we talked about in this episode in the show notes over at doingitpodcast.co.uk. And please let us know what you think over on our Twitter or Instagram at doingitpodcast. If you like this podcast, please give us a rating and review over on iTunes. It's really appreciated. Here is the first episode of season four with Andy Thornton. Hello, welcome, Andy. I'm so happy to talk with you.
Hi, it's so nice to be here.
Yay! I thought we'd start out, because you're a multifaceted human being, I would love for you to describe yourself and, like, what are your identifiers?
Wow.
And then bonus question, does it ever change depending on who you're talking to?
Oh, that's so good. Let's dive straight in. So I'm lots of things. So I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. I'm a Christian Quaker, which is like a kind of type of Christianity.
It's the oats, isn't it?
It's the oats. Oh.
Sorry.
Obviously, the oats aren't actually made by Quakers, which is just the bane of my life. Anyway, so I'm also an illustrator. I work in digital marketing. I am trans. I'm non-binary by gender. I'm an avid plant dad.
Oh, I love that.
And I also, not officially diagnosed, but I'm pretty certain I'm autistic.
Okay.
Which has been great fun finding out and actually really enriched my life.
We can talk about that.
Yeah. I think that's all of the, like, the big boys.
The big boys. Brilliant. Well, so you say you're bi-gender. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Because it, like, bi, if we're talking language, means two. Mm-hmm. Do you identify with two genders, two or more? Because I know also people have, like, the whole thing about bisexual and people meaning it not meaning just two, but, like, one and others.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm bi as well, actually. And for me, that's, like all genders, Mm-hmm. I'm probably technically pan, but, you know.
Yeah. So I think most people, like, understand what bi is. It's just, like, more used in society in general. So people are like,
exactly.
It's like a shorthand sometimes.
And to answer your second question, yes, it does change depending on who I talk to. So for instance, if I'm talking to somebody who's not, like, an obvious queer ally, I'll just be like, oh, I'm non-binary, because that's the one that you've heard in the news. Do you know?
Right. Okay.
And I love, or if I'm, like, talking to Christians who maybe aren't overly accepting of queerness, I'll be like, oh, I'm LGBT. And then that's just really broad and you've got no clue.
Wow. Just like, I'm just going to give you this umbrella.
Yeah. and you
see
can
how you react.
Yeah, so for me, bi-gender is, I think for a lot of people who are bi-gender, that's all genders. I think for me, I do really associate with kind of different aspects of kind of stereotypical gender. I think it gets quite, because I'm also a sociologist. I studied sociology at Bath.
Oh, let's get into it then.
Let's get in. They'll start bringing Foucault out. No. So it's difficult because obviously you want to talk about the ways that, like, I feel I really relate to these things about being a man, but then that they're not necessarily male things, do you know, because gender is a social construct. So there kind of is a caveat before I talk about how I feel that, like, that's very specific to me.
I guess it's like associating yourself with traditional masculine characteristics rather than, yeah, it's like how we, like you said, it's a social construct, but if you identify with aspects of that social construct, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's about like how you feel comfortable, you know. So for me, like, I love being in a group of guys and, like, being a bit laddie and kind of, I don't know, like the kind of good kind of masculinity. I really relate to that.
Yeah.
Also, some of the, I have, like, a lot of toxic masculinity. I'm embarrassed to cry in front of people. It's a whole thing. But then I also really relate to kind of, like, the, in air quotes, female experience of, like, the patriarchy. I love kind of sitting with groups of women and talking about our feelings, and, like, I'm very kind of ambitious in what I feel is, like, actually quite a female way.
So I love that, like a specific brand of female ambitiousness.
Sounds like an indie band album title. Female ambition. But I think for me, it's like, for being bi-gender is, I love gender. I love it as a way of expressing myself. I want all of it. I'm very greedy. And so I will express myself in, like, a really masculine and really, really feminine way. I kind of don't necessarily, like, I've got a friend, Matty, who's just sort of not any of it. And that they're also non-binary, but they're like, you know what, gender, not for me. So it really does depend. But yeah, for me, it's, I just love it.
I really enjoy that explanation of your, like, experience of gender, of just like, I just love gender so much. Like, all of the genders, I love them all so much.
I just want it. Like, I love,
that's amazing.
I think, do you know the Killing Eve?
Yes.
Do you know the massive pink dress, the Molly Goddard dress she wears in Killing Eve?
Yes.
That is my gender.
I love it. Yep. A visual representation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it, like, just that dress, or is it Villanelle in the dress is also your gender? Or is it just sexuality?
Yes, Villanelle is my sexuality. The dress is my gender. But it's true, like, being bi really comes into being bi-gender. Because, like, so I love to describe myself as gay, because when I'm with people, I like being with somebody who I feel the same as. But obviously, if you're both genders, you're just gay, but it's all very complicated.
That's so interesting. I never thought of it like that, but you're so right. Like, every relationship that you would be in is gay, but also you're still bi.
Exactly. So it's like, it just shows kind of the limited nature of language, I think, and that we're all just trying to work out the best way of describing ourselves, which is why I love queer and non-binary, because it's like, I don't have to give you a 5-minute explanation. You can just know that I'm not cis and straight.
Yeah, they are great umbrella terms. Mm-hmm. One thing that I've been thinking a lot about, like, sexual orientation and language as well recently, because you bring it up, is how a lot of the language that we currently have to describe, or like, sexual orientation, it not only includes the gender of the personal people you're attracted to, but it also includes your own gender in that word. And I'm like, where is the language that has got nothing to do with you,
Yes.
But only stuff to do with who you're attracted to.
Yes, because we're really missing that. And mm-hmm. I think what that looks like at the moment is you have trans people identify, like non-binary masculine people identifying as lesbians. And then everyone's like, yeah. wait, but you can't be a lesbian. And they're like, just let me have this.
Yeah, just please.
So I think...
I love this word, right. Let me have it.
Let me have this.
Yeah.
You're completely right. It's, I think we're now getting to the point where instead of using like a single word, you're just like, oh, I like these people. Mm-hmm. So for me, that looks like I like people who are often I like people who are quite arrogance, maybe strong.
I'm especially attracted to arrogance. Is it confidence.
I love, like, the best way to turn me on is to like get into a deep intellectual discussion and I'm like, yes. But for me, I like people who are kind of in the middle of masculine and feminine, and actually that doesn't really, what sex or what genitals that ends up appearing as doesn't mm-hmm. really I don't mind.
It's like a kind of presentation that you're into.
Yeah, and like a kind of a way of interacting. And as you say, like, just saying I'm bi doesn't cover that.
No, it doesn't. Because I also feel really restricted with heterosexual and straight. I use it because I very much move throughout the world with straight privilege. And yeah. so I'm just like, I'm straight. Like, that's how I move around the world. Like, I'm a cis woman. My partner is a cis man. Like, but like you said, if I wanted to sit down and have like a 5-hour conversation about my sexuality with somebody, it would be, they'd get a different answer.
Yeah.
Because I find myself attracted to cis men, but I also find myself attracted to trans men
yeah.
and some non-binary people as well. And mm-hmm. so I'm like, where does that even like
put me?
Where does that put me? Yeah, exactly. Mm. So, but for the most part, I'm just like, I'm straight. Like, it's just easy, but I don't, yeah. When you get into it, I'm not super happy with the rigidity of that language.
And I think that's really important to flag, because I think a lot of people aren't just one thing. Like, I've got a lot of friends who like are similar to you, identify as straight, but are like, I really wouldn't mind going down on a girl sometime, and who identify as female, and like, do you know, and mm-hmm. it's a bit more complicated than that.
Yeah.
But we just don't, I think hopefully we will eventually get to a point in society where you won't have to define as straight, because you'll just be like, oh, I like these people.
Yeah. And it's more of a action it's a verb rather than a I am. It's a like, I like, or I sleep with, or yes. I have relationships with.
Exactly. Because it's, I know some people who are bi, but only want to be with women because they've had a bit of a terrible time with men. And then I have other people who have had a terrible time with women and so only want to be with men. And it's like, well, saying your sexuality doesn't cover that either.
Yeah, that's so true. Ugh, language is limited. Let's all have deep discussions about it so we can actually know where everyone stands.
Exactly. It's true for gender as well.
Yes.
In that I think everybody has a complicated gender identity. It's just that trans people have been forced to notice that, because mm-hmm. their complicated gender identity doesn't fall within the remit of what's expected. But even cis people, you know, the way that they experience themselves, that they present to the world, is combined of so many different factors and is very complicated.
Yeah. I think that's so true. I think cis women, to an extent, examine their gender because of the patriarchy, mm-hmm. but cis men are probably like bottom of the ladder in terms of examining their own gender.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Sorry to call you all out, cis men, but like, it's
God
true.
Bless. God bless.
You know, you're trying hard, but please try harder.
Yeah.
You mentioned about not being diagnosed, but being pretty sure that you're autistic. Mm-hmm. How have you come to that conclusion? And also, like, has that impacted your gender, your relationships?
That's such a good question. Yeah. So That started when, shout out my dear friend Freya Bewley, turned to me and was like, Andy, I think you're autistic. And my flat were like, what are you talking about? Andy's really good at socializing. They're really extroverted. Like, they're not autistic. But I watched this, just for interest, this video by Them, like the platform Them, about like women talking about being autistic. And I was like, oh, I'm not crazy.
Like, because it presents differently, and that's why a lot of women find themselves, or like AFAB people find themselves being diagnosed much later.
Yeah, because you learn to mask. I think when you're raised female, you're taught how to placate everyone in the room, how to make sure that you're always polite and always pleasant, and you know, you put time into learning those social cues. But it's a lot more than that. So AFAB autistic people often are actually really creative and like humanities and arts people.
Whereas the stereotype of the autistic person is more like sciencey maths.
Exactly. Yeah. And so for me, it was, I mean, when I first realized, I was like, oh good, another label. But it's been amazing because I suddenly understand, first of all, I'm not like, oh, I'm crazy, because one of the things is if I'm in a group of people and everyone's talking at once and there's music in the background, I find it quite hard to follow what's going on. Like, sometimes I just don't get things.
In a way, a sensory overload.
Yeah. And so I'll just get really overwhelmed, and then I'll kind of have a bit of a meltdown where like my body kind of shakes and stuff, but in my brain I'll be like, I'm literally fine. What's happening?
Right.
So that was amazing, because now I can be like, oh, this is just because I've had a sensory overload. No worries. I'll go and sit in bed for 2 minutes and then I'll be fine. And so it means that I can like take the meaning away from that. And it also helps, like, I'm not very good at sarcasm. I'm very sarcastic, but I'm not very good at understanding when someone's being sarcastic.
Oh, that's interesting. So you can dole it out, but not receive it.
Give it, can't take it.
Amazing.
So that's been really interesting. And then, like, so in my relationship, it's also helpful because, like, when I was with my ex, like, he could understand why I do certain things and look out for that. And also, like, when I'm really happy, I jump up and down.
as you should.
And I used to think that was really weird, and now I'm just like, no, it's just fun. Yeah,
more people should jump up and down when they're excited. I squeal.
Squealing is great,
but I do a full-on squeal.
What I meant to say is, the interesting thing also about gender and autism, I have this really good book that's all about like research into AFAB autistic people.
Ooh, and what's it called?
I don't know.
And let me know, and we will put it in the show notes for people to check out.
Yeah. In that, it talks about how actually most of the people they interviewed are on the gender spectrum and are at least bi. Which is really interesting. And I think,
what do you mean on the gender spectrum, as in like not cis?
Not cis,
Right, yeah.
So a lot of AFAB autistic people are kind of either androgynous or like gender fluid. And I think it comes from, when you're autistic, you just don't get rules. So I know all the social rules and I follow them and I have a script in my head that I do, but I don't understand why they exist. For instance, queuing. I'm like, I know that everyone here wants the thing that I want, and so that we should all wait. But I want it, so why can't I just go to the front? Which I probably
should have admitted. Absolute anarchy.
Yeah.
I'm all for a bit of gender anarchy, actually. So
yeah, and this is the thing, you're like, okay, I know that I should wear lipstick, but I don't want to. Also, often like tight clothes and like high heels, which are kind of more stereotypically feminine, aren't comfortable. And a lot of autistic people are like, I would like to be comfortable all the time. So I think that's part of it as well.
That's really interesting. Do they like does in the book, does it have any kind of explanation as to why they think that is, or is it kind of like still, we need more research, please?
Yeah, I think generally it's we need more research. And they talk about how, you know, autistic people often don't like tight clothing, and they don't get why they'd have to act a certain way just because they're female.
Mm.
And so I think it almost comes into more challenging gender roles necessarily than like necessarily not being female, but almost that's kind of linked enough. I also think, so there was a test on the BBC where you could see how autistic you were a while ago.
I love internet quizzes.
I know. And on that, they had like autistic for a guy and autistic for a girl, and how if you're male, you're kind of more likely to just be further up the autistic scale anyway.
Right.
Because of how I think we've socialized women into being more kind of often more astute and more, I don't know, reactive.
It's so interesting.
So I wonder if part of, and I think maybe this is true for me, part of my identifying with like masculinity is like, well, if I'm clever, you should just see me as clever. Why me being a woman part of it? And if I don't, if men don't pick up on social cues, people are like, ah, classic. And it's not a big deal. Whereas if I don't pick up on social cues, I'm terrible and a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
You're like, come on, give me some slack here. Like, treat me like a man, please.
Exactly.
I love that. So when I asked you to describe yourself, the first thing you said was Christian. And I don't know if that was intentional, that it was the first thing that you said, but now I'm going to ask you lots about it.
Yeah, because it's like, it is probably the most important thing about me and all my life. Yeah.
Nice. I guess my first question is, has it always been easy being queer and Christian, or has that been a journey?
Oh boy. Buckle in.
Oh, let's go.
So I became a Christian before I realized I was queer. I became a Christian. My family aren't religious. My dad's Buddhist. And I became a Christian in year 7 because of a miracle, which is quite cool.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, love that.
What a wild story.
And then realized about 2 years after, while I started going to a very anti-gay church, that I was queer. That I was bi, which was a nightmare. I mean, my pastor told me to be celibate. I had a Christian friend who was like, obviously we'll still be friends, but like, I don't approve. It was a whole thing. And I did a lot of praying. I was like, you know, if you don't want me to be queer, I won't be queer. And that's fine. And I did a lot of Bible research. Oh boy. And all I found.
Go to the source material.
Go to the source. Exactly. Hear it from the big person. And all I got when I prayed was good things. And all I got when I actually read the Bible and read it in context and like read all the academic kind of scholarship on it was just like overwhelmingly positive towards queer people. There are so many queer people in the Bible. There are so many queer stories in the Bible. Shout out to Blessed are the Binary Breakers, which is a really good podcast led by Avery, who basically they go through like loads of queer stories in the Bible that are like have been detranslated but actually exist, which is really cool.
Back to that language thing again.
Exactly.
I think we forget how many iterations of translation the Bible has gone through.
Yeah.
And like how much original, like contextual meaning will have been lost.
In a huge way. My favorite one is Joseph's Technicolor Dreamcoat. Which
gay
first of all gay but Joseph and this is from Peterson Toscano, who I learned this from, the word is I think it's pene tassim. I'm saying that really wrong, but the only other place that that appears in the Bible is to describe a princess dress.
So the name of his like coat, cloak, yeah. is also it's a princess dress.
Yeah. So
love it.
Joseph's actually a non-binary icon.
We stan.
So I basically, then I got into a relationship with a fabulous gal called Aleph, who was Muslim, and basically realized that how could I believe in a God who made love a sin?
Mm.
Because when I was in that relationship, I was like, oh, this is normal. This like feels so natural and so like holy. Do you know?
Mm. A lot of people find, like, even if you're not religious, a lot of people find sexuality, relationships, love, like very spiritual.
Yeah. And so then I was like, okay, great. God is fine with the gays. I've done my research, smashing. And then I went to uni, realized when Ruby Rose came out, and mm-hmm. said, I'm non-binary, sometimes I'm a guy, sometimes I'm a girl. I was like, oh, that's what it is. So that kind of spoke to, now I understand why I feel how I feel. That's me. And then I was like, oh, crap, I've got to do this whole God thing again.
Oh, but with gender.
But with gender. And that was really tricky because... I did my dissertation research on this of bi and trans exclusion within the church and within Ooh. LGBT communities. And even in queer Christian spaces, there's transphobia. Because even within queer spaces, there's transphobia,
yeah.
do you know?
Yeah.
That was tricky because for a long time I was like, why did you make me wrong? Do you know, which is the classic narrative. I was with a devout Christian at the time who's straight and cis, and who was accepting and encouraging, but when it came to me talking about getting top surgery, was sort of, oh, but you know, God made you this way. So, and that all got a bit tricky.
Yeah.
Mm. But now I think again through research and through prayer and through kind of living as myself, I've realized that being non-binary actually brings me closer to God because God's non-binary.
So true.
You know?
Like, even though we like to use he, him pronouns.
Yeah.
We don't know.
God's super queer. Also, Jesus was like the sassiest gay ever. No, don't. I'll get crucified if I say that.
I hope not.
No, but
alleged queer.
Alleged. Well, no, just very, very sassy, very accepting of queers. Yeah. But no, for now, I kind of have this narrative. I read this amazing quote that was. God makes trans people for the same reason they make grapes and not wine and wheat and not bread, so that we can share in the joy and mystery of creation.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, amazing.
Here, have something to do yourself.
Yeah, because, you know, in a
I'm
going
to do half of the work for you.
And you can finish it off. But in a way, like, isn't that true for everyone? Do you know, like, mm-hmm. when we're born, we're not who we become. And
yeah.
being trans is just one part of becoming who you are. Do you know? So now yeah. I feel really blessed to be trans. I feel like it's amazing.
Because you're part of that creation.
Yeah, because I can connect to God and I can just be authentic. It comes back to the autism as well. Everything is linked. Because I can just be who I am and be authentic and show people that they don't have to be constrained by gender. And I think that's a very Christian message because fundamentally God is love and Jesus was like, can we all just flip and love each other, please?
Here's that, the girl in Mean Girls. Just like, can we all just get along like we did in middle school?
Yeah. That's like Jesus' teachings in a nutshell. That quote from me.
Oh, I don't even have to read the Bible. I get
yeah,
it.
Done. Sorted.
Amazing. So when I asked for people to send in their questions for you, so many of them are about being Christian and being LGBT. And I will get onto those because the way that they phrase their questions is just better, because I think a lot of them are also Christians, so they know more shit than me.
Yeah.
But beforehand, you told me pre-recording that you also have vaginismus. So I kind of just wanted to ask about that as well. We're just like, we're firing off all of the different topics today. But I guess I specifically wanted to know, I guess, like, when did you notice that something was up?
Mm-hmm.
And have you found that it's less of an issue in queer relationships because there's less of like a rigid script around penetration?
That's a really good question. So how do I answer this? I had quite a terrible relationship when I was younger, which means that my kind of vagina didn't have a great time. And so I think the answer to when did I realize something was up was when I kind of realized that having pain after sex, or having like discomfort, or like sexual stuff not being comfortable or what you want wasn't normal.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing that I should have learned at school.
It's honestly ridiculous, but they actually teach you the opposite. They teach you that it is going to be painful.
Yeah.
Ugh, it makes me so angry.
I know, which is why I love working for the School of Sexuality Education. I was teaching in schools the other day. Yeah, and we were literally teaching about how like you know, things should always like be okay, and you should like, everyone should enjoy sex. And it was just amazing to be able to like teach that in a school.
Yeah, give that to some young people.
Exactly. But actually, I went to see a play by Chucked Up Theatre called Have I Told You I'm Writing a Play About My Vagina? And it's all about the author who, and how she realises that she had vaginismus.
Ah.
And I watched it and I was like, oh.
It me.
Oh, yeah, right. And so then I went to get checked, and it was something that it was kind of always just about manageable, became more noticeable when I actually started having having sex that was consensual and fun and safe, because then it's like, oh, why do I still feel terrible? Do you know?
Yeah. But it's like in your body, it's like a bodily response. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I went to get checked out at a clinic and they were like, oh, you might have vulvodynia, which is a form of vaginismus where it's like actually a sensory thing, like a physical thing.
But then because also isn't that, I might be wrong, where you might get pain in the vagina vulva region even when you're not having sex?
Yeah So that's like it's kind of irritated, and like anything irritates it. And I do have a very sensitive vagina. I have to take great care of her because she gets aggy at me, and that's part of it. But yeah, eventually they saw that I had vaginismus. And I'm really lucky in that my vaginismus, if I manage it and if I make sure to like do certain things, I can have penetrative sex and it's great and not a problem.
Mm. Without getting too TMI, if this is crossing any boundaries, maybe just in general, like what are some things that people can do to look after their vaginas and their vaginismus?
What a great question. I'll tell you all of the things generally, some of which apply to me and some don't, and then TMI isn't an issue. So they always say cotton underwear, which is annoying but is like true.
That's also just generally good. If you've got a vulva.
If you've got a vulva, just do it. Also, like, are your pants too small? I had this amazing I have this amazing friend Rachel, and I was having a real meltdown because I was like, Rachel, my pants are too small, I'm put on weight, and like, I know that's a good thing, but and Rachel was just like, buy bigger pants.
Yeah.
Do you know?
buy some bigger
just buy bigger pants. Yeah. There's no problem here. But also E45 cream is
Honestly, savior from day one of birth until the day you die.
Literally, praying God, E45. So that's really good, and it's something that you can do like generally daily, or you can also do it if you're about to like things about to heat up.
And just in general, E45 kind of on the outside. We're not putting it inside anywhere,
that's a
people.
Really good point. Yeah. No, just on the vulva.
Yeah.
And don't overdo it as well. Also quite good as a face cream, so that doubles up.
Amazing.
Other things that can work are, so you can get dilators, you can, a lot of it is about feeling safe. So it's your vagina, basically your vagina has anxiety.
Yeah.
So they're like, I don't want anything in me. So if they feel really safe, if you feel really safe and you know that at any point you can stop and at any point you can be like slowed down, then that really helps. Also, if when you start penetration, you kind of do that very, very slowly and leave, like stay still for like a minute and then start moving.
Yeah.
That can make a massive difference as well.
Great tips just in general for people with vaginismus and not.
And just generally, And I know Yes Glide do a vaginismus lube. I've not used it, but that's also something to check out as well.
There we go. Right, I'm going to dive into people's questions. People had a lot
of
questions. Yeah. Someone asked, have you ever felt the need to challenge your church leaders and how have you found that?
Oh, what a great question. So I have done that actually, twice.
How did that go?
I have a strange relationship with the church because I've been to a lot of churches that have been quite bad. Mm. There was a church in my hometown who... someone in the congregation wanted to come out as trans, so I took them to the pastor and we had a conversation, and they were like, he was like, obviously, you know, we like would love you to keep coming to the church, but we don't know if we can baptize you and you can't be on church leadership.
Oof.
And that was horrific. Because the idea that you could, that there would be anything that you could not be baptized for just goes so strongly against Jesus's basic moral principles.
Right.
So that went okay. And he was very polite, but that's such a problem. I found that in my research as well. There's such a problem in Christianity of we will tolerate you. We will not explicitly say anything to you, but we will disapprove and we will not allow you to become a real member of the church.
It's that, like, we'll be nice, aren't we nice Christians?
Yes. Which isn't, like, Christians aren't, should be nice, they should be radically inclusive, do you know?
Yes, I love that.
And then recently I go to a church in Bath, and I, for the first time in my life, I felt I actually have a spiritual home here. The people are so accepting, and it was amazing. And I, you know, I was in a prayer group where we were about to pray, and I was like, oh, by the way, my pronouns are they and he. And the person leading was like, great, that's really helpful to know. And just used he pronouns in prayer, which was awesome. But the pastor of the church did a, what can only be described as a bit of a dodgy talk, talking about, which again was all very, he didn't say anything explicitly problematic, but the just all of the tone and the kind of the phrases and the way that it was just really didn't sit right with me. And so I had a meeting with somebody in the church and was like, look, I would love to be part of church leadership. I would love to be really involved in this church. But I can't be bothered to just be tolerated. Do you know? And so like, can you tell me if you actually do accept like transness? And am I fully welcome in this church? And the person I spoke to, was like, obviously I think you're great and that's not an issue, but I don't know about the leadership. So I will get back to you. And that's where I'm at right now.
Oh, well, ooh. I hope that they look at their institution, I guess, and look at their group and just be like, right, let's make the good decision here, please.
Yeah.
This is kind of related. Someone asked, is there a difference between a welcoming and an affirming religious community?
Yes. What a spot on question. There is.
I feel like that's what we're getting at. You want that like affirming.
Yes. Affirming. Community. And the Quakers have been really great for that, because the Quakers are explicitly affirming, explicitly inclusive. And I think what that looks like is the way that the language that people use, the presumptions that people do or don't make. Like, is there a rainbow up in the church to say that they're an inclusive church? Do you know, are they willing to sacrifice certain members of the congregation who aren't inclusive in order to be inclusive?
Yeah. That's so true.
And I think
rather than making it like a palatable environment for everyone who might have some homophobic or transphobic views, they go, no, this is the space. This is what it is. And you like either join us in this inclusivity or
you're out. And it doesn't need to be, people aren't going to get it straight away, especially if they are, haven't been exposed to LGBT plus issues or people or identities before, they're not going to get it straight away. And that's okay. We can't cancel people just because they don't know things. Mm-hmm. But it's about a church actively working with the congregation saying, okay, we want to be in a church that it follows Christ's example and is inclusive of all people. That means we want to include all LGBT people. If you have a problem with that, let's have a discussion and show you these resources where you can see that this is what Jesus would have done. And actually like putting in the work to be an affirming church.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Someone asked how to deal with the shame you often get from Christianity. Wow. Is this something you've experienced?
In a big way. I have cried in my car outside churches before.
Oh, no.
Just being like, why does God hate me? There is so much internalized shame, and it's really hard. I think, first of all, it's just great that this person can recognize it and see that it's there. Mm. So part of my job as a LGBTQ plus person of faith role model for Stonewall is talking to young queer Christians.
Mm.
And there's just so much shame. And often it's things that the church have said to you or that people have said to you or that you've just picked up that you kind of hold on to as truth. And I think the biggest change for me has been finding new sources of truth, like new authority. So like Blessed are the Binary Breakers, or there are loads of trans and queer Christian resources made by vicars and like academics who have deeply studied the Bible. And I think it's all well and good knowing that, but if you really dig into it, you can be like, oh, the shame that I've been given is from people, not from God.
Oh, yeah, that's actually a really great way of thinking about it.
Yeah, and then it's just like, it's about knowing that they're wrong and you're right. And that's something that, to be honest, like praying as well, like, obviously, like, this is for Christians, but for me, like, some of the most amazing kind of leaps in getting rid of my shame and like just loving who I am have been from having a session of prayer and getting nothing but good things from God. Of like, God has been using my right pronouns before I was using my right pronouns, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember like 3 years ago being like, what? So I do think like, it's often really scary because you're like, oh crap, if I pray and God says don't be trans, what do I do then? But you're just not going to get that. So it's about like having that faith and knowing that, you know, you are made perfect. Yeah, have faith, know that you're made perfect, surround yourself with affirming people, do the research, and know that you are made in the image of God.
Yeah. And someone asked, and I think this one comes up a lot with people who are Christian, but then also who aren't, because this is something that I think about a lot. Mm-hmm. Are you able to, and how, separate Christianity in the Bible from the church as an institution?
Yes. Yeah, which is so important. I'm not a big church person. I love going to church, but I've had so many bad experiences that it's not necessarily a great place for me. But whenever I've looked into the Bible, whenever I've looked at what Jesus says, it's all positive and it's all loving. So I think in the same way that you separate anything, like if, you know, we don't, it's extremely Islamophobic to compare somebody who believes in the Muslim faith and ISIS, because they're just not the same. They're just not.
And we often like grant that it like more individual nature of faith to Christians, whereas we don't often grant it to people of different faiths.
Yes, exactly. And so I think it's about understanding that people ruin things.
And why is it people who are so shit sometimes?
I know. And actually, that's not coming from anywhere. Like the homophobia and transphobia and the kind of strict gender roles that a lot of churches push on people is not coming from Jesus. It does not come from God, and it is not, it's in the Bible, but it's not necessarily encouraged in the Bible a lot of the time. And even the resources that that are taught in churches miss a lot of the like alternative relationships, polyamory, like matriarchs, do you know, like all of that is there. There's even a sex worker in the lineage of Jesus, Rahab.
Nice.
But we don't get
to. And isn't he like BFFs with a sex worker as well?
Oh yeah, like Mary Magdalene's like his second in command.
I love that. I think as someone who's like an outsider to it, I get really like frustrated when I see often like the real life impact that the more traditional, not even traditional, because like I'm sure, as you would say, the actual traditional way is the super queer Bible. The more kind of like strict gender roles, the transphobia, the homophobia, the sexism, like all of that. Like I see the impact of that on people. And that's what like makes me really sad and angry. Yeah. But that's also then why I'm so glad that there are people like you who exist.
Thank you.
Who are just like, no, come on. Like, faith can be a really positive thing. It can be really beautiful, and it doesn't have to, and not even that it doesn't have to conflict with your gender or sexuality, but that it actively is supporting that and part of it and encouraging that.
My faith in God definitely has saved my life and has been a really enriching part of like being queer, but that's been a struggle just because of churches. But also I think it's important to say, like, even quite modern churches that seem really like liberal often can have kind of these underarching views that are quite damaging. There are lots of queer Christians, and I think it's about just separating those two things.
Yeah, separating the two and trying to do better.
People are always like, oh, so you're not that religious then? And I'm like, no, I'm really religious. I'm just also queer.
Yeah. Yeah, and they don't have to be two separate things. So, because someone else actually said, how to like deal with people who assume you're homophobic because you're Christian.
Yes. This one's funny because I have a shaved head and I dress quite kind of queerly, I guess, if that's even a thing. That doesn't mean anything because anybody can be queer. But so I have the opposite, which is people often are like, no, but you're not really a Christian, are you? Like, you're not like, come on. And then I've also been described as like, oh yeah, they're a Christian, but like they're one of the good ones. Do you know? I think, yeah, it's just about, I do always have the caveat of, yes, I love Jesus and I'm also really gay. It's just about coming out with both of them straight at once.
Yeah, and both are true at exactly the same time, in the same intensity.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that. Well, Andy, thank you so, so much for chatting with me and answering all of my questions.
You're so welcome. It's been such a delight.
Where can people find you online?
Yeah, so I'm at Human Satsuma on Instagram, and I have an art account which is at Les Get Better, L-E-S Get Better. I also manage the School of Sexuality Education's social media. So if you could give School _ Sex Ed a cheeky like, that would really help me out.
We love them.
We love that.
Absolute shout out to them.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Doing It. If you enjoyed it, I would really appreciate it if you left a rating and a review. You can find show notes at doingitpodcast.co.uk and do go follow us on social media, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye. This was a Global Original podcast.